Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 83 of the Uncovered podcast. I'm your host, Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me, as always, is Jared Kimber, who you can find literally everywhere. And I mean, there are lots of things to discuss which happened off the cricket field this week. So, I'm not sure where to start. Maybe we'll start with the T20 World Cup squads. I think that's a good starting point. Yeah. And just a reminder to everybody, whoever wants to, you know, view our written work, videos and podcasts, you can go to goodareas.co, bookmark that webpage. It's your one-stop shop for all the work that we do over here. Anyway, let's start with India. Now, I'm not going to read out the squads out loud because there are lots. So I'm just going to go with main themes over here. Rinku Singh not making it to the squad was big news. And I, for one, would have taken Sandeep Sharma as well, because I thought that, you know, he was one of those seamers who had done consistently well, both at the death and this year, also very, very well in the power play. So I thought he fixed or filled a lot of gaps and holes for India in that regard. And yeah, I mean, I somewhat get Sandeep getting dropped, right? Because, I mean, he doesn't have that kind of PR, I suppose, and they haven't invested in him like they perhaps have in Siraj. But Rinku has caused a lot of stir in, you know, within Indian media and all of that. And I mean, when I looked at the squad, I was like, who do you bring him in for? You either take one wicketkeeper and drop Sanju Samson, or you take one of Jadeja or Akshar and drop one of those guys. And I don't know, man, it was tough. It was tough to make room for Rinku.
Well, you can't actually play Akshar Patel, Ravi Jadeja and Yuvi Chahal all together anyway.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
You know, Yuvi Chahal, I think he's brilliant. We both are huge fans of him, but how are they going to fit him in if they're going to use one of these left arm finger spinners? And they've got two of them in the squad. So clearly one of them's going to play. I don't understand this idea of having a backup wicketkeeper in your squad when you can have injury replacements.
Yeah, that is a very fair point.
You know how I feel about this. India, and this is not just India. I think there's so many teams. This happens to associate teams and it happens to the big three teams. And it probably happens to teams in the middle as well. These squads are too small and they don't make any sense.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want...
I don't know why they still don't have 18-member squads in ICC.
Here's one for you. Who doesn't want Fraser McGurk or Mayank Yadav at this World Cup?
No one. Everyone wants them.
Right? They're not there because Australia want a backup batter. I disagree with Australia's theory on that, because Marcus Stoinis and Matthew Wade can both play positions 1-7 and have at times anyway. But that's why India and Australia don't have those kinds of players in their side, whether it be Rinku or Abhishek or any other... you know, any other exciting, dynamic kind of player. How is that making this a better World Cup? Right? It's not. Having Mayank Yadav on the bench, and then you could have Chahal on the bench, and you could add some other interesting players. You could have, Shashank or Ashutosh or, Nitesh, the young bloke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could do some really cool things with the lineup. Instead, we've got Josh Inglis and Sanju Samson. And I'm not saying those two don't deserve to be in the top 16, because as the way it is scheduled, I kind of get that. I don't want them in this. I don't want them to be the automatic players that come in. I want Fraser McGurk to be in the mix, right? I want it.
You want the radical picks.
Yeah. I want Dylan Brevis to be in the mix. I want there to be some more dynamism. Imagine Australia and India start struggling and it's like, ooh, they're making the big move. Inglis is coming into the side. They're making the big move. Sanju Samson's coming in. Who's getting excited outside of people from Western Australia or Kerala for those calls?
Yeah.
Right? No one else gives a shit about those calls. And that's not slagging off those players, because they're really, really good. And it makes sense in that kind of squad. So there's my biggest issue. Right? But let's move that away, because I'm always complaining about that.
I think there's one too many bowlers. While we're on Australia, because there's just one major talking point, which is Jake Fraser-McGurk. We'll come back to India. But, you know, we've been talking about it in all of our Overthrows podcasts. Initially, we thought maybe he's not quite ready yet. Then, at least for me, he showed me what he can do versus spin. And I was like, okay, if he can do that versus spin, then he's automatically in the conversation. Then we discussed how in a top three of Warner, Head and Marsh, where does he fit? But surely, I mean, you take one wicketkeeper over here and replace that one slot with Fraser McGurk. Because
I think Australia's issue is far bigger than India's. It may not matter. These two teams might go on to win the tournament, right?
Yeah.
It may not matter at all. But I think their issue is bigger, because they're like, oh, we need a backup batter. And it's like, but you have flexibility in your actual starting 11, where you don't need to worry about that. I'm not sure India quite have that kind of flexibility just because Stoinis and Wade are both batted everywhere because they're freaking old as nuts, right? Like, you know, they've been around a long time. So I think that's a bit of an issue. But the other one is what we talked about the first time Fraser McGurk's name was mentioned, which is Mitch Marsh is probably going to have to bat at three. Cameron Green is going to have to, if he plays, going to have to bat somewhere in the top three.
Yeah.
If they play Warner, they've got Warner, and Head is automatic. Fraser McGurk doesn't fit perfectly into that, and they're going to want some more bowling out of, you know, and Mitch Marsh has to play. They're going to want some more bowling out of Cameron Green at one point. So, you know, I think they're in a situation where it isn't completely perfect. To go back to the India one, I think they've got too many spinners. I mean, I don't think you need that many spinners. They had to make a decision between Jadeja and Akshar Patel. Right? That would have been the best way to do it. Or you pick both of them and Chahal doesn't go.
Or you take one keeper and the other one is a traveling reserve. You could do a bunch of these things, right?
Yeah, maybe you could do that too. I just feel like they've got a lot of... It feels like a very safe squad. And, you know, I've done a whole video series on, I think, India come to World Cups and they play it too safe. And they and it feels like the exact same thing again and again and again. That doesn't mean they won't win this World Cup. I think they're still currently favourites with most of the bookmakers.
But there is one caveat, Jared. And Cheyenne and Varun were talking about this in our group chat of how they don't really trust any of the seam bowlers apart from Bumrah because Bumrah is operating at a different planet. But then you've got Siraj, who's had a terrible IPL, barring a few games. And Arshdeep, okay, left armer, love that, swings the ball both ways, love that as well. Has he been the best left-arm seamer in this IPL? No. You've got Khalil, you've got Mohsin. I mean, they're not great options.
You've mentioned two other players, and you haven't mentioned Natarajan, who I think is the second
best. And Natarajan,
he's the second best Indian bowler in this tournament, right? So if you have Natarajan, can you not be in a situation where you use Bumrah as a more attacking threat? And you say,
that's true.
We trust you, Natarajan, to bowl two overs at the end. We're going to get you to bowl the Bumrah overs, maybe 17 and 19. We'll get Bumrah to bowl the 18th, but we want him to bowl the 12th. We want him to bowl the 2nd and the 5th or the 1st and the 4th or however we do it. And we're going to attack teams. And if these teams want to block out Bumrah, great. They can block out Bumrah and then they have to deal with Jadeja and Kuldeep and Akshar and Chahal, whichever one of those guys that they end up going with straight after, right? You know, do the pincer movement, you know, from that point of view. That would be the attacking option.
Yeah.
Arshdeep not bowling particularly well. Hasn't really bowled well probably since the last World Cup. I still like Arshdeep and I still think he'll be a really, really good bowler. But if you're bringing Arshdeep and you're bringing Siraj and you've got Avish Khan as your backup.
Yeah. And Khalil as your backup.
And Khalil. I just think.
With no Sandeep.
Sandeep and Natarajan have been the second and third best Indian bowlers of this tournament. Now, that doesn't mean that you necessarily take them. But I think that might be the better option, and that might have unleashed Bumrah a little bit to go. No, we're gonna back Natarajan. I really like Natarajan. I just think he's a really good bowler. And when he's fit, I think he's fantastic. His biggest problem is he's never fit. But I mean, Avish Khan is such a baffling decision because you're watching him bowl in games where the other Indian bowler looks twice as good in every single game.
Yeah, it is a strange one, right? He had some good games up front in the IPL.
He's not a bad player.
He wouldn't have been my reserve pick. And I personally feel that India went for two seamers with Bumrah who they had invested in. And that's just, again, like you said, safe option. But I look at the squad and there are two potential combinations that they can play. One combination in which they have a really deep batting order and one in which they have a lot of strike bowlers. Now, we always fear that they'll fall prey to the Evan Gulbis effect if they go the strike bowling route. So how do you see them shape up?
It's really interesting, isn't it? I suppose what you would do is you go Siraj, Bumrah, Kuldeep at 8, 9, 10. And then you then bat the long batting order and you have the guys down. I don't know if that means Shivam Dubey needs to bowl. I don't think it does.
I don't think it does. I mean, if Hardik has picked up bowling form in the IPL, that actually works like wonders.
Yeah, I think I'm right then, aren't I? Because that means Akshar will be listed at 8, Jadeja at 7, Hardik at 6. Not that they all have to bat in that order, but I mean, as far as bowling options go, then you don't need Shivam Dubey. So you take in three bowlers who can all take wickets, and then you've got three all-rounders of which you hope work. And you mix and match, and you know, maybe you occasionally shiv and dubay bowls and over when you need a little bit more seam. In the West Indies, that shouldn't be as much of an issue, and the finger spinner should be fine.
Yeah.
And you mix and match a little bit with the way that you do that. Maybe Hardik bowls too, and the other guys combine for a couple as well, or however that needs to work. That's a long batting lineup with stroke bowling, right? I'm not wrong there. I mean, Siraj may not be in great form, but if he works, good luck to a few teams going up against that.
Absolutely. Here's how I look at it. If you even go with the strike bowler heavy lineup, if we count the batters, maybe two of Gill, Kohli and Rohit play. And then you've got the likes of Sky, Shivam Dubey, Pant, Hardik Pandya. That's enough firepower. You shouldn't be afraid. You've got Akshar as well in the mix somewhere.
You said Gill. Is Gill in the squad?
Oh, sorry. Did I say Gill? Yeah. I meant Jaiswal.
Oh, yeah.
Jaiswal, Rohit, Kohli, Sky. Oh, well, I said two of those guys play, right? Jaiswal, Kohli and Rohit, only two play. Then you've got Sky, Shivam Dubey, Hardik Pandya, Rishabh Pant, Akshar Patel. That's still long and you still have a ton of strike bowlers in there.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a few different options for them. I think the issue is at the moment that Akshar, Hardik and Jadeja don't look like they can hit for power the way that they have in other times in their career. And so that takes us back to Rinku Singh.
You know,
because Hardik could potentially bat at five, but you start to run into issues with where Rishabh Pant fits into this lineup, right? You start to run into problems where Virat Kohli fits into this lineup.
Yes.
It's not straightforward the way that they want to do that. I think if they do want the long batting lineup, it does actually cause other problems in other ways than it might if they went with five bowling options and they and Hardik and let's say Akshar have to bowl their overs. You know, that's a slightly different one. The minute you sort of fit Jadeja in, it does change things a little bit. But
yeah,
it's they're still the they're still one of the favorites, right?
Absolutely. Even without Rinku, who by the way in 11 T20i innings has been dismissed four times, has 356 runs, and strikes at over 170, averages 89. So I heard I saw a tweet in which it said that his dad and his family, everyone had bought like firecrackers and everything to celebrate his selection, and then he didn't get selected. So, deepest condolences because he has been hard done by over here. Quickly on Australia, four seamers, your regular three incoming Stark Hazelwood and then Nathan Ellis, your, death bowler. With all those slow ones and everything. Now, in the Caribbean, I see a world in which Ashton Agar, Adam Zampa and Maxwell are bowling 12 overs. That way, only two seamers play. That could be good for Australia, right? Because even if Stark is not in form, you can just go in with Hazelwood and Cummins.
It's interesting. My bigger question is, of all the players whose form is the most dubious, Mitchell Starks would be the most obvious. And I know they'd love Nathan Ellis. But wouldn't Spencer Johnson be the better backup seamer in that side than Nathan Ellis?
I mean, is Behrendorf done?
I mean, on a day-to-day basis, I couldn't tell you if he was injured. I'm assuming he's injured, if I'm being honest. And the last time we saw Jai Richardson bowl, he looked injured as well. So I just think that if they want a left-arm bowler in the squad, Spencer Johnson makes the most sense. And he's now not going to be there. And that's not slagging off Nathan Ellis, because I like Nathan Ellis. But I just don't think that's the cleverest way of going about it. Here's the thing I would say is I don't think they really rate Ashton Agar all that high. So
how does he always make it to their squads?
Often does he make it to their 11s?
Yeah, that's true.
He makes a lot of squads, dude. He's the Jeetan Patel of Australian cricket. Every time there's a squad, his name's in it. And, unfortunately, he never actually gets to play in any of these games. So I'm quite interested by that. And how they go at it. I don't think they'll be that confident with having that kind of lineup. But if they have Stoinis, if they have Marsh, probably not Green, I think we might see them, try the two full-time spinners and the part-time spinner for 10 overs and then two seamers and two part-time seamers for the others. They've been pretty happy to go in with Maxwell, Stoinis, Marsh, Green, whoever they may be, to make up their fourth and fifth bowling options, probably more their fifth bowling options at times. Are they comfortable enough to do it for one and a half bowling spots. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but maybe that's what they have to do for this particular tournament. And what happens if Mitch Stark does go to the Dogs, it does change who they are as a team quite dramatically.
Cricket 8 brings you this show. They are a new player in the game trying to educate fans on what is really happening in cricket. Head over for their watch-alongs, podcasts and articles on what is happening on the field and why it matters. Cricket 8 is your place for cricket intelligence.
Absolutely. But good thing is that Hazelwood is probably fresh for this World Cup. So, and Cummins is having a great IPL. So, I mean, Australia, I think, is probably the strongest squad that I would say Australia is the strongest, just because you've got such firepower in the batting that maybe your bowlers just need to be good enough. You know, they don't need to be exceptionally well. Plus, Adam Zampa has also not played the IPL. So those are some fresh legs. Anyway, for all our New Zealanders and Black Caps fans, we actually reviewed their squad in last week's Uncovered. So go check that out. Right now, we have West Indies, England and South Africa coming up. Let's go to the West Indies first. Host nation. And when I looked at the batting, I was like, ooh, no Kyle Mayers and still looks incredibly strong, right? But when I look at the bowling department, I feel like the spinners are a bit over-reliant on Kutukesh Mothy. And there is no wrist spinner. There is no left-arm pacer, so Obed McCoy didn't make it. And the death bowling seems to be a bit of an issue. So how frequently can they out-bat teams? And how good can Mothy be to kind of carry the spin attack on his own? Those are the major issues. Like Roston Chase, not the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember on our group chat, people got quite excited about it. And so I looked at it, I think after all you guys had looked at it, and I was like, Johnson Charles, Roston Chase, Shai Hope, Brandon King. There's a lot of players.
Well, Charles and King have been doing really well opening the batting.
Not saying they haven't. Hmm. It's not, you know, it's not Travis Head and David Warner, is it? Do you know what I mean? Like, if they're going to beat teams with batting, how are they going to beat teams with batting? Looked at this. The Pooran Shimron thing, I've always thought that is a huge strength, but we've never seen it work.
And Rovman. So there are three guys in the middle who can really hit it.
Yeah. It's good, but I'm not sure I'm feeling it. And then let's go to your bowling point. Who bowls the death overs in this side?
Yeah, that's the issue.
Okay.
I don't know, Jason Holder?
I mean, Jason Holder takes a lot of wickets at the death, but goes at a phenomenal amount of runs. There's a reason he's not in the IPL anymore. Gurukesh Mody, I really like, and I think it'd be really interesting. Shamar Joseph, that one game in the IPL seems to have spooked people. I think he probably deserved more than one game. Romario Shepherd, West Indies bowl him way too much. Andre Russell's in good bowling form, which is a very, very good sign. So I like that. Akhil Hassan, I really like, but then you do have two left-arm finger spinners.
Yes.
They are very different to each other, to be fair, but they are. Mm. I just look at this lineup and I go, I'm not sure about Alzari Joseph as a T20 player, right? Johnson Charles is a really good player, but is he good enough to win you a World Cup? Roston Chase has suddenly become very good at T20 cricket, but I'm not sure I trust that. Shai Hope, I'm going to double down on that. Brandon King, I would throw in there as well. Shafane Rutherford, another guy who's kind of always there and there and thereabouts with their side. It's not that it's a bad squad. I don't know if I see a path for them winning the tournament, which I think there's a few other people who've been quite excited about that and said things like, oh, this could be the team that upsets everyone. I'm like, I would be absolutely shocked if this squad got up and won the tournament. If they made the finals, I think I would see that as a win for them.
Yeah. I mean, that bowling does look a touch weak, and I think Mothy will have to do a lot over there. But the batting, I think I trust them a bit more than you do, because there's lots of firepower in there, and I can see them chasing down large totals. If it even gets to that on those surfaces, because I'm assuming they're playing all their games in the Caribbean. Why would they go to the USA, right?
Oh, I haven't even checked that. That's a good point. Yeah, but that would make sense, but I would have had to have looked that up before now.
Yeah, anyway, let's move on to England. And Joffers is back, baby. Finally, after so long, we're going to get to see, hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going to get to see Jofra Archer, who's got some pretty good company in the pace bowling attack. Like, you've got Mark Wood, you've got Rhys Topley, who might not even get a game because they might opt for Sam Curran, strengthen the batting. And then Chris Jordan is in fantastic bowling and batting form. Two selection calls that were a bit, iffy were Tom Hartley and then Ben Duckett. Now, Duckett, I understand. Slow surfaces, has all the different kinds of sweeps, and is a decent T20 bat. Good backup. Mm-hmm. Hartley, don't really understand that one. So, what's your take?
At least he's played it. he hadn't really played first-class cricket all that much before he played before. I think they've come to a point at which they are just picking players on style and on fit. Is Tom Hartley the Ashton Agar of... Do you know what I mean? Like, you have him in your squad and you feel a little bit more comfortable. Push comes
to... Why isn't Liam Dawson their Ashton Agar? Because he's supposed to be the Ashton Agar. He is. He's the World Cup winning Ashton Agar.
I think they probably want a taller spinner. I know that sounds stupid. And also, where does Liam Dawson bat in this lineup? So I don't know if you can get much out of... Liam Dawson's a better bat than Tom Hartley, right? But is he a better bat if he's batting at 7 or 8? Like, is he a plus player if he bats at 7 or 8? Whereas Tom Hartley could probably come in and slog at 7 or 8. Might be their thinking. I don't know. You don't make a bad point there. You know, I'd probably still go with Samet Patel, but I love Samet Patel. But but yeah, it's an interesting side. If Jofra plays at Jofra's level, then they have a legitimate chance of winning the whole thing. If they don't, it's going to be pretty much down to the batting, right? Of, you know, can they Kolkata or Sunrisers up the World Cup and play it from that point of view? So it's it could be a very one-sided team.
I mean, the batting isn't an issue, right? If anything, maybe Johnny Bairstow doesn't even get a game in this batting lineup. That's how good it is. But look at the bowling, sure. I'm not sure if they'll play Wood and Jofra in the same game. They might go for Topley, but then you've got Sam Curran who can kind of do what Topley can do as well, just not as well. And then that's how you fit Chris Jordan into the fold. Now, Adil Rashid is going to play every game, but is Liam Dawson his only support as far as turning the ball is concerned? Maybe that's an area of weakness.
Liam Dawson.
Moin Ali's there. Sorry, I completely forgot Moin.
I think... Moin's not bowling much anymore, is he?
Yeah, no, he isn't. He's bowled like, a couple of overs here and there for CSK?
They will use him as a matchup bowler if they play him. It's certainly a weakness, that second spinner position. Right at the moment, who would you rather bowling for you in a T20 World Cup game? Moin Ali or Glenn Maxwell?
Glenn.
Yeah. And Moin Ali's obviously a better bowler. Like, Glenn Maxwell wouldn't tell you that he's a better bowler. But
I mean, Moin can rip it, but Glenn Maxwell is hard to get under.
Yeah. Glenn Maxwell's just a clever one-day bowler. And Moin has been a good bowler because he can rip it rather than... you know, and he's never been a wicket taker and, you know, he's no longer a really good defensive bowler. Look, I think they're an interesting thing. They're just to go back on the odds. So India is at 3-1, which is probably a bit short. But remember, anytime you see odds on Mumbai Indians or India, that probably the weight of money is what has shifted the odds rather than the actual expectations of them winning. Australia is around 3 or 4 to 1, so about 3.5 to 1, I suppose. England is at 5 to 1 on most bookies at the moment. All three of those teams have flaws. There's not a particular team there that you would say deserves to be favorite, but at the same point, you could make a very clear guess that one of those teams is going to win again. But if you can work out which one it is, you might make some money. But I'm not sure I feel all that comfortable on any of those three. I'd almost want to back those three against the field, right? Rather than actually backing those three teams.
Yeah. I would pick Australia if I had to in one of those, out of one of those three. But anyway, South Africa is the last T20 squad of the day. And you've got the usual suspects there. Aidan Markram is captaining the side. Two new faces, and these are guys who I'm assuming have performed in the SA20. I haven't followed it too closely. I know Ryan Rickleton has, right? He's the wicketkeeper batter, left-handed bat as well. And then you've got Otneil Bartman, who is a right-arm pacer, but also 31 years of age. So how did he get in there?
Yeah, I mean, he's been on my list for years as a surprisingly good cricketer who just sort of, like numbers-wise, he quite often pops in certain kind of years, if that makes sense. But you look at his overall record, and I just want to bring this up. He's played 70 T20 games and he's taken 98 wickets and an average of 17, right? And his economy is 7. Now, not all of that is at the highest level or anywhere else, but as I said, I will look up numbers and he regularly comes up and he hasn't really ever made a huge push. And maybe now they're finally coming to the point where they've decided that he is that level of player after all these years. He's been playing I reckon he would have played his first T20 game around 2013, 2014, maybe off the top of my head. Like, he's been around for a very, very long time. And if you look at his, if you look at his overall record, so he's played 36 games for the Dolphins. And he's got a bowling average of 16.88. So you see a lot of times with these South African players who have good domestic records, it's not in the absolute top level. It's often playing in sort of random the lower league where they completely dominate, and they go through stuff like that. He's done it in those sorts of games. In that higher level. But at the same time, it feels a little bit from nowhere. Like, they haven't been trialing him or anything. And, you know, it's a fascinating one. I haven't read any articles by some of the great South African writers out there, but, you know, I'd be interested in what, you know, Telford and Lugani and Manthorpe and those sorts of people make of this. Because it does feel like, from our perspective, he's come from nowhere, right? And as I said, for me, he was a statistical anomaly before this. So I don't know really what to make of it all that much. I'm just trying to bring up, sorry, just one second. What have I got here? So in 2023, he took 12 wickets in the SA20 at 17. This year, he took 18 wickets in 8 games. An average of 12, right?
All right, then.
So we're more than happy with that. And as I said, I have seen his name come up in so many databases as one of the best bowlers in the world from time to time. My question is, they didn't just learn about him. So why is it taking them this long to actually get him in, right?
I mean, he's older than I am. He's got a year on me as well. But let's see how that pans out for them. And even if he gets a game or not, because of course their pace bowling, stocks are stacked. Ryan Rickleton is someone who CS is really excited about. That's what I know. So here's to hoping that he can replicate some of that SA20 form for South Africa. But anyway, that kind of wraps up the T20 World Cup squads bit on Uncovered. Varun says in the comments that West Indies do play all their games in the Caribbean. Guyana, Trinidad and St. Lucia to start. So there's some info for you guys. But yes, stay with us. We're going to take a short break and we're going to come back with some Pakistan news as always and also some interesting news, which we'll get to. But yeah, catch us right up. Welcome back to Uncovered. You guys are with Behram and Jared. And I did have a whole segment on the PSL's potential clash of a window with the IPL. But I see Anish also has a super chat on that. So we'll save this for that super chat. And I'll give you some hot goss. Remember how, I don't know if I told you this or not, but the PCB chairman set this independent three-member doctor panel to kind of assess the whole Ehsanullah injury fuck-up. And Dr. Suhail Saleem, who I think was the chief medical officer, if there is such a term, but he's basically the head of medical at PCB. He has resigned in light of the findings of that medical panel. Now, Ehsanullah's injury, it turns out, was not assessed, operated or treated adequately. And there was a delay in diagnosis and inappropriate prescription of treatment. So much so that the surgery was actually hurried and the choice of surgeon was inappropriate, that they just gave the job to someone with no experience and someone who doesn't really specialize in sports medicine, which is, well, I don't even know what to say about that. As a result, Ehsanullah is now out for another year and will require more surgery. And who's to say whether or not he ever comes back as that 155 kilometers per hour thunderbolt bowler. They also have said that Ehsanullah had some non-compliance with the rehab plan, but they never provided him with the formal rehab plan. Whatever plan was provided was inadequate. So I don't understand how this falls on him. And by the way, Jared, this dude, Suhail Saleem, I don't even want to call him doctor at this point. He was fired by Rambo, or at least in that era, might have been fired by Wasim Khan or Rambo, one of those guys. And then he was brought back by Sethi. You know, after he was fired post-COVID bubble fuck-up in the PSL, if you remember that. That's why he was fired. Najm Sethi, when he came back as PCB chairman, brought all of his old guys back. Dr. Suhail Saleem was one of them. And you've got to hold Sethi accountable as well. As far as this doctor, I feel like you need to revoke some licenses at the very least. And you also remember... the Naseem Shah injury. He fucked up then too. Like, he was complaining about his back and shoulder, and Nasim was out of the ODI World Cup. So good news is that he's resigned. Bad news is that there's still an injury list, which are following prescriptions prescribed by him.
It doesn't sound professional to me.
Yep. I mean, it's really, really glaring. I'm happy that at least they put a panel up, but this guy's got to pay. Like, if you do this in another country, you can't practice anymore.
Yeah, I mean, there is a difference between being a bad doctor and being a malpractice, right? And
yeah,
they might just say he's a bad employee and he loses his job and gets his reputation ruined. It looks like that's what it's on the road to. There's a big difference between that and malpractice, right? And I don't know what the malpractice lawsuits are like in Pakistan. But if I'm a professional athlete who's missed out on 6 to 12 months of extra cricket and being able to, you know, forward my life, especially if I'm a fast bowler, I'd be interested to know if I had any recourse. And, you know, that's all allegedly, and we have no idea if what we are hearing is legit, because it, you know, some of the stuff that comes out of the PCB is obviously not always full of truth. Is maybe the best way of putting it. As Shaheen Afridi might put it.
Yeah, I suppose. What I'm really pissed out pissed off about is that they told him to, you know, do these exercises or whatever, which aggravated his elbow injury. And they never diagnosed his shoulder injury. So what the fuck are you guys doing? Like, this kid, oh, well, he's not actually a kid. He's one of those guys who I feel has corrected his age or whatever. But he was quick. He was really, really quick. And now, all of a sudden, he might never be able to play at this level again. You have to hold someone accountable. Screw Sethi as well. Why'd you bring him back after all of that drama? Like, this is a guy who fucked up a COVID bubble when that was a big deal. So, I mean, it is a bit shocking to me. You know what else is shocking? Monty Panesa, your colleague at TalkSport, has put himself up as a candidate for the MP position for the Workers' Party in London. And he wishes to be PM someday. Prime Minister Monty, following in Imran's footsteps.
I mean... I don't know what you want me to say. Look, I like Monty. I have worked with him quite a bit. He's always been a very nice person to work with. I wouldn't vote for him. I mean, I'm going to be honest. The list of people I've worked with in cricket I wouldn't vote for is quite high. And they aren't all former cricketers either. But I wouldn't vote for Monty. I wish him all the best in his life and his endeavours. But it's a random story, isn't it? And also, like, it's the easiest smear campaign of all time. It's just to show him on Mastermind getting all those questions wrong. Do you want to vote for this man? And there you go from there. He's not going to be prime minister. It's certainly not for George Galloway's party. I can tell you that now. There's a lot of cricketers get asked to do politics outside of Asia. So obviously in Asia, they accept those jobs quite a lot. Mm-hmm. A lot of cricketers outside of Asia get offered those jobs. Most of them don't like to do it. It's interesting that Monty, who I would say I've had zero political conversations with, I can think of 15 other cricketers in England alone that I've had more political conversations with than I have with Monty. I find it really interesting that he wants to do it. I wish him all the best and good luck.
I mean, I would vote for him, dude. I love Monty.
Have you heard of Count Binface?
No.
Count Binface is a person who regularly runs for office in the UK. I think Count Binface would fare pretty well if he went up against Monty.
Damn. Well, we'll see how that pans out. But also, I wish Monty the best of luck. And you know what? If Monty becomes prime minister, I am saying this on record, I will move to the UK permanently without a job or anything. I will somehow just... you know, rent an apartment and I'll settle.
Well, now I have because to make it happen.
Yeah.
I was going to say I'll be his Josh, but I wouldn't be his Josh, would I? I'd be his Toby. I don't know. That's only going to work if you're a West Wing fan. Imagine being Monty Panesar's political advisor. That would be a fun position. Doing it just to see how much fun I could have.
Yeah, I would love to live in a country where Monty is the prime minister. Let's just put it that way. Anyway, on to some somber news. Josh Baker, 20-year-old Worcestershire, slow left-armer and budding all-rounder, has passed away. He literally played a game for the second 11s a day prior, took some wickets. And, he'd been playing cricket, top-flight cricket, for not too long. But he wasn't fresh either. Like, people knew who he was. He was still 20 years of age, so obviously had to mature. And we don't know the details of how it happened, but it is extremely sad. It goes on to show us how fickle life is. And I mean, whenever something like this happens in cricket, it really hits close to home, doesn't it?
Yeah, look, obviously, young people die everywhere in the world all the time, but it is a community. And, you know, I will have known people who have coached him, you know, who've played with him, you know, all those sorts of things. I think Ashley Giles is the director of cricket there, you know. So
I think
thing in cricket is you kind of always have a link back to everyone. Mm-hmm. It is a very small community. And this is incredibly sad news. And, you know, we had that spate of younger players passing away a few years ago with PK Dharma and Tom Maynard doing it, you know, in quick succession. Obviously, you know, the Phil Hughes one was the more famous one, but, you know, it has happened before. Car accidents and cancer and all sorts of things. But this one seems to have come absolutely from nowhere. And is it's incredibly sad news, and thoughts go out to his family and to the club.
If anyone's watching from Josh's family or friends, like, our deepest condolences and thoughts go out to you, and I hope that you guys are able to bear this loss. And I mean, to the cricket community, you know, props to you guys for all coming together, all of you, and kind of, you know, condoling this, because I think it's important.
I remember when Maynard passed away, I was covering a bit of county cricket at that time, and just how much it affected all the guys. You know, it's different than a normal work environment. It is a work environment, don't get me wrong, but it's different than a normal work environment. And, you know, you're not always friends with your teammates, but there's a different bond than just being a worker colleague with them at times as well. Thoughts go out to everyone there.
Absolutely. And from what I've read, he seemed to be a very delightful, you know, young character in the team who was really sprightly and kept everyone, you know, motivated. Not only motivated, but like, he was just very kind. And that's what I've heard of him. But anyway, let's move on to the Super Chats then. All right. Anish asks, why are betting websites have India favorite for World Cup? Looks like betting people are not aware of India, LOL.
So remember, with bookmakers, it's not just about who they think is going to win. They have to prepare for the fact that if every Indian in the world backs them and India do win, they are going to lose a ton of money. So they have to come up with a realistic price that doesn't stop people betting on them, but also doesn't bankrupt them if India win. They can't be in a situation where they lose out if one team wins. They're trying to make sure that they win no matter what. And that doesn't always happen. So that's a big part of it. The other part of it is, who's the natural favorite for this tournament? We think the West Indies is going to be a more subcontinental style tournament that should help India. There are problems with India. You know, we had the, I was talking about the odds before. I think South Africa, who we mentioned, are 6-1, which I think is quite short, if I'm being honest. I've got them right here. Where is it? Yeah. So India, what did I say? They were about 2.5-3-1. It is short. They probably should be 3-3.5-1. They probably should be around where Australia are. England are at about 5-5.5. South Africa are 6-1. New Zealand 8-1. Pakistan 10-1, which is incredibly optimistic. Sri Lanka 16-1, which is incredibly optimistic. I'd be surprised if this tournament was played 16 times, and Sri Lanka ever won one. You can get Afghanistan at around 25-33, Bangladesh around 33-40, and then obviously it goes out to 200-1 afterwards. But if you were to ask me who should be the favorite of this tournament, I'm not sure I would naturally say anyone there. I don't know. I think there are problems with the Australian team. I think there are problems with the English team, and I think there are problems with the Indian team. So, oops, I didn't mean to do that. I can understand that.
Yeah, I would say it has to be one of those big three nations. Like, it has to go to one of those. That's what conventional wisdom suggests. So I think that's what the bettors are going with as well.
Yeah,
the betting market.
I was going to say, as the tournament gets closer, you might see a swing towards Australia and England anyway. My guess is that England will come in and India and Australia will. So if you're looking for better odds. And also the other thing I would say is the best time to bet on the World Cup winner is usually after the first couple of games. Because the odds go absolutely dramatically in all sorts of directions after one game. So it's always worth having a look at that. For instance, Australia probably got out to 6 or 7 to 1 at one stage during the last 50 over World Cup.
Yeah. Rishabh Sharma asks, are you still in touch with George Dobell? George Dobell. I remember you two working together. What's this last thing? To expose ICC. Well, Jared has a documentary called Death of a Gentleman, so you could go check that out.
But George didn't work on that
George
movie.
Dobell. Yeah. George and Jared were polite inquiries for the longest time.
Yeah, yeah. We worked together for years, and then I can't remember which one of us left. I think I left Crick Info before he did.
You did, and because he left more recently for The Cricketer.
Yeah, and then I went back and he left. So I think I went back after he went. Yeah, we didn't work together because we don't work for the same company anymore. We've talked about doing podcasts and stuff. George is, every time I tell George, like George has never even been in Reninka and he's one of my best friends. So every time I tell him he needs to be on, he just sort of doesn't get back to me. And, you know, one day we will do something together. I mean, there's heaps of people I've worked with in cricket that I don't work with anymore. You know, Melinda Farrell, Andy Zaltzman, Sam Collins from Death of a Gentleman. Like, there's lots of people that I've worked really, really closely with that I don't work with anymore. It doesn't mean, you know, Barrett was on this podcast, right? It doesn't mean I'm not friends with him anymore. It's just professional stuff. It goes in different directions and you know, it doesn't always work the way that you want it to work. But yeah, me and George will definitely work together one day. I don't think that will be an issue.
Tell him Rishabh said that his name is George Dobell. That'll be
a funny story. That's a joke, isn't it? From
oh, is it?
I'm trying to think if it was. I think a coach might have called him Dobell. I'm trying to think back. Anyway.
Yeah. What connects me to George is Azeem Rafiq. Both of us know him. But anyway, Anish once again asks, or this is not a question. He says, Jared, if the Sunrisers win the IPL, I will splurge some dollars here. So make it happen.
Probably not going to happen, Anish. But thank you for your super chat anyway.
But if it does happen, those better be a lot of dollars then, right? Because because now you've said this. Path right winger, frequent question asker on Super Chats. He says, is there something unique to South African sports and fitness culture that makes them look so good aesthetically? Ooh.
They're big, aren't they? I mean, you know, you look at the rugby team, they're big. They eat a lot of meat in South Africa, probably more meat than anywhere else. The braais, and you know, there's that running joke. If you go into a South African restaurant and you ask for vegetarian, they give you chicken.
Dude, I used to go to this South African burger joint in Toronto, and it's probably the best burger I've ever had because it had that round sausage called the boeri in it. Oh my god,
boeri, drivis. I'm pronouncing that wrong. Drivis is probably my favorite snack in the world, which is another dried sausage that you get from South Africa. Obviously, a lot of people love biltong. I like biltong, but it's not quite for me. But they're a very meat culture. It's funny that you say that they want their physique, because they're very big and they're very thick, but they're not always cut, if that makes sense. Do you know what I mean? Like if you look at Faf is probably one of their more cut guys, whereas a lot of their guys are actually more beefy, more like
he's
players.
Chiseled.
Yeah,
that's what Faf is.
Faf is probably more like an Australian player in that kind of physique, or a New Zealand player, whereas that, you know, that Callis Smith, Markram, might even put 100 class in those sorts of bigger, beefy guys. Charles Langeveldt, Martin De Lange, there's tons of them that are like Rory Kleinveldt, you know, they're big, chunky dudes, right? There's just a lot of human there. But yeah, I think it's a lifestyle thing as much as anything. I do think it comes out of the, I could be wrong, but it feels like to me it comes out of the sort of the way that African culture eats, and that has influenced the rest of South African culture at times. But look at their rugby team. They're friggin' massive, aren't they?
Huge.
You know, and so I do think there's a big part of it that's that. But yeah, I'm not an expert, other than the amount of times I have actually eaten food in South Africa and thought, I have eaten a lot. I mean, I have a meat sweat.
All right. There's another question by Path, isn't it? Or is that just a continuation of the same question?
There is another one. Sorry, this one.
Yeah, he says...
Oh, no, we did that one before.
No. We did that one before. This one says, part-time gym trainer in UAE. I get asked by Desi guys to build them a physique like SA cricketers.
Yeah, we did that.
It's
all that one question.
He thought it was the Dutch genes, but now you've given him more context.
Well, Dutch people are really, really tall. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I know Dutch people and I know South African people. And I would say South Africans are thicker, right? Like they are bigger everywhere. But Dutch people are freakishly tall, and South Africans are quite, yeah, especially white South Africans are quite tall. I don't know what the averages are. And a lot of South African cricketers are tall. So the tallness, I think, comes from there. But I've been to the Netherlands and I've been to South Africa. I can tell you which country eats a lot more meat.
One goes the meat direction and the other goes towards the cheese, meat and cheese. All right. Anish says, IPL and PSL clash in 2025. What's going on, guys? So I actually had a segment for this entire thing on this show. I'm going to give you a quick briefer on it. The PSL has to be played in a separate window this time because Pakistan are going to South Africa in the winter. They'll be back in January. Then they are hosting South Africa and New Zealand in an ODI tri-series. And then they've got the Champions Trophy in mid-Feb. Right after that, you've got Ramzan, which is the holy month for Muslims in which they fast. So that's not an ideal time to host the PSL. So, you know, it's not like they've chosen to go that direction, but they've put out this window potentially of April 7th to May 20th, because I think they're lost for choice. Like, they're not spoiled for choice over here. They don't really have any options. And they haven't, like, I've seen a lot of journos, particularly in Pakistan and India, put out like some weird tweets in which they're like, oh, the IPL is going to be challenged by the PSL. They've mentioned that they merely want to coexist. There is no challenging the IPL. Only a fool would think that way. And when I looked at this news, I had an initial thought that I was like, hey, this is good, because now you could just get the best of the IPL rejects and I could work with that, you know, for the PSL. And Pakistan aren't playing any cricket during the IPL anyway. So that means that everyone who doesn't get to play the IPL gets to play the PSL. But then in terms of long-term cons, I started to think in that direction. And one would be that the PSL has been one of those leagues where budding English talent comes and makes a name for itself. Now you've got a clash with the county championship and maybe that's not possible due to contracts. And then also broadcasting rights. Like, what happens there? If a channel only has one slot and two games running at the same time, then what's the future over there? Obviously, they're going to go for the IPL game. So those are two major worries for me, because they have expressed that they want to make this more long-term and wish to coexist. But you know what? This is just a proposition right now. Not even all of the franchises are keen, because Lahore Qalandars don't want to lose Rashid Khan. So why would they say yes to this, right? But the last bit of information on this is that the PCB has expressed their desire to have the playoffs in the UK because they want to take the PSL's brand further. It's a double-edged sword. People in Pakistan love the PSL. You could have just Pakistani players playing that tournament and people would fill up the stadia, right? Even with weaker foreign representation, the numbers in terms of viewership have gone up. So I understand, you know, their logic of wanting to enhance the PSL footprint, but it comes at a cost.
I think the PSL is going to be a domestic-only product going forward. Mm. And so if that was the case, I would only play it during the IPL.
Mm. Interesting.
That gives you 10 months for the rest of the year to play international cricket when everyone's playing international cricket. Right. Mm. Otherwise, you've got, how long does it take? 6 weeks? 5 weeks?
Yeah. So 7th April to 20th March May is around 5-6 weeks. Yeah, you're right.
So you've got 5-6 weeks where you have that. And then you have 2 months where you have the IPL, where you also can't play many teams, which essentially means you're missing 3 months of the year for international cricket at the moment, which is making everything else a little bit tougher. I don't know how much money they make off international TV rights, but I'm going to assume it's not going to make a huge dent in the PCB's coffers to not have it. You could save money by having lower value international players playing for you anyway. Rashid Khan costs an absolute fortune. Andre Russell costs an absolute fortune. Or you know, Karan Pollard, all these guys. And I think I said this at the time when, you know, all those teams pulled out of the series to Pakistan. The best thing for Pakistan cricket would be to make sure that the PSL works as a purely domestic product and appeals to Pakistani people, and it becomes the IPL of Pakistan, right? Not you don't want it to be the Big Bash of Pakistan or the 100 of Pakistan, right? You want it to be the IPL of Pakistan. And if it does that, then it is an absolute success and it will help train and fund cricket in Pakistan for years and years to come. It's not... what's its best case scenario? That it's the second most popular league in the world? And I don't even know if that's a possibility, if we're being honest.
Not with the SA20 and ILT20 and all of these other leagues around.
Major League Cricket's got the only, and the 100 are more likely to do that. And
there's big money there.
And how much money is actually in being the second biggest league, right?
Yeah. Also, they have said that they might bring the salary caps for platinum players up to like 300 to 350 to maybe 400K for that short amount of time. And currently, I think the highest one is like 220 or 200, something like that. But then, you know, you're going to have to wait for the IPL auction and then have your draft after that and check with all of those players whether or not they want to participate. It might be possible just for the 1 year. But yeah, I think you kind of make sense. I don't see long-term feasibility over here, unfortunately. But if they find some happy space in between in which whoever's done with the IPL, like the Jason Holders of the world, if they just start to come to the PSL instead and earn a lot of money, right, as platinum players, I take it. Because right now the PSL is a successful brand, not because of foreign representation, but because of the Pakistani
brand. That's what I mean. So I don't see it as an international league anyway. So I don't have an issue with that. I mean, maybe if they looked at it financially, it would be worth less, and then they have to make a big decision. I'm not sure how much less it would actually be worth, if we're being honest.
Fair enough. All right, Anish, with one final question, asks, did you guys read Lawrence Booth's Wisden article? I've heard a lot about it already, but I haven't had the time to read it.
I haven't read it either, no.
Yeah.
I've been asked more questions about it than read it. Yeah. I mean, it feels like it's already old news anyway, but yeah, I haven't read it.
Yeah. Oh, there's another one. Anish, once again, thanks for all the money, buddy. Guys, in a world where there is no India and no billion people country, how do you think cricket would fare? Would some other country take India's place? I mean, we're talking about hypotheticals over here. We lived in an imperial world. Maybe it would never have shifted.
It depends on how you mean, Anish, because with all the money and the billion people, Australia has still been the dominant force of winning cups and everything, even of recent times. So in some ways, I think you have your answer on how it would go. I still think it would have gone to franchise. Where that would have happened without India is interesting. How that would have gone. But eventually, one way or another, it would have had to go to franchise, because the franchise model makes much more sense in modern sport. And the way that we're going with sports all around the world, it was always going to go to that. So the India part of it is probably supersized by one person and his ego and making that tournament happen. But the fact that there was already another franchise tournament there, and I think you would have had people like, we had the Fair Break women's tournament briefly before that seems to have disappeared. We had the Hong Kong Blitz and things like that. I think people in Hong Kong Sixes, if you want to go back, I actually think we
love that tournament.
Yeah, I think we would have seen a former franchise cricket come in anyway. Mm. Who becomes the dominant player there, Anish, is the more interesting part of it. Because Australia is dominant on the field, but cricket isn't worth as much money, I don't think, in Australia as it is in England. So that would have played a slight part. I think the more interesting question is always what would have happened if, when they formed the ICC, they didn't make it a Commonwealth-based. And if Ireland had not moved away from cricket, and the USA had played cricket, and Argentina played Test cricket, and Argentina had played Test cricket, where would we be now? That's a far more interesting one to me than if India were not there. Because then, is cricket legitimately 1A to football's 1, right? 1B to football's 1A, I should say. And instead, we are, even if we're the second biggest sport in the world, it's like everyone's playing for like fourth place behind football.
Also, there might not have been a shadow ban on Pakistan players. That would have been nice. But anyway.
Oh, yeah. Well, from that point of view, Pakistan players could have shadow banned. PSL could have been the biggest league in the world, and it could have banned other people.
Who knows? They would do exactly what India does if they were in their position, by the way. That's subcontinent culture for you. That's how they think. But anyway, that wraps up this episode of Uncovered. So if you guys enjoyed this episode, give us a like on YouTube and subscribe to both this YouTube channel and Jared's other YouTube channel. Also, we have all of our written content, podcasts and videos at goodareas.co. So bookmark that website. It could be your one-stop shop for all of our work that we do over here as a team. And yeah, we'll catch you next week for another episode of Uncovered. That is all for now. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes.
We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bairam Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku, as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recording. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.